Right now, there are more border walls on the face of the earth than at any point in human history. Let me say that again. We have more walls now than ever before. The vast majority of them built fairly recently, built since the turn of the millennium. At the end of World War II, that number was less than 5. At the end of the Cold War, there were 12. Now there are 74, 6 times the Cold War number, and 15, at least 15, are under construction right now, being built by the day. Separation's becoming the norm. Everywhere we look, we can see it. More often than not, we walk around in shoes whose makers we can't name. We eat food whose growers we can't identify. We speak into cell phones that contain minerals mined in war-torn places far away. And days might pass without us stopping to consider this, if we're even aware of it at all. At every turn, separation. This can't be good for us. We need a new consciousness, a higher perspective. Among astronauts who have orbited the Earth, there's a near universal experience that they report, having looked at our planet from space. They describe exactly this, a change in consciousness, and it happens so reliably that there's actually a name for it now. It's called the overview perspective. Have you ever had the experience of boarding a plane, and maybe when you got on the plane, you had something on your mind, like a problem you just couldn't solve, or something that was really bothering you, and then you ascended and looked out above the clouds, and somehow, by the time you landed again and walked off the plane, something had clicked into place, and your quandary was solved. If so, you've had a little taste of this. You've experienced an epiphany as the result of having a bird's eye view. For astronauts, looking at the whole Earth, this phenomenon is so strong that sometimes it alters their way of living ever after. They speak about a heightened awareness of beauty. Often we walk around kind of numb to the glory around us, but their defenses come down, and suddenly it cuts them right to the core. Beholding our blue-green planet from the cold blackness of space, they report a surging feeling of care for the Earth, a protectiveness. Seeing how fragile the planet truly is, they'll do anything, they feel now, to protect it and keep it from harm. And most of all, they relate a sense of oneness. Up here, all those borders that are so important, usually, can't even be seen. There's just one Earth, and the planet looks so tiny that the notion of dividing up humankind seems absurd to the point of laughter. From this vantage point, it's so clear. They're just flooded with this awareness of how silly all of our tribalisms are and how separateness is an illusion. What would it look like if we lived from this perspective all the time? Would there still be 110 armed conflicts going on as there are right now? Would we still have all those walls and fences tipped with razor wire and strung with alarm bells? Would defense still be the industry it is? Would we still drill for oil and frack for natural gas? Would the voices and saber rattling of nationalist leaders still hold any sway for us? It's hard to imagine abiding with these things if our minds were really clear, if we saw this one world for what it is. So we need a prescription for awe and wonder. We need reverence and beauty to startle our minds awake again. Today, Jesus calls his disciples up a high mountain to a point where they can get that bird's eye view. And right off the bat, this is the starting point for the Christian journey, the remembrance that there's a picture so much bigger than ourselves. It's really easy to get caught up in pettiness and in squabbles and divisions. It's so easy to get tunnel vision about some particular goal or life situation we're in. But Jesus is always trying to get us to tap into that sense of greater belonging to the earth, to all of humankind. Few things are more elusive than that consciousness. It took space travel to jolt the astronauts into an experience of it. One obstacle that I think blocks many of us in living with that big picture perspective is we really struggle with knowing how to relate to the past. Jesus leads his disciples up a mountain in Galilee. Before they go up, they have to go back. They have to return to a very specific earthbound place, a place where their journey with Jesus began in an earlier formative time of their life, the place they first experienced their call. And it's in that place that this summons to a new chapter comes to them. Jesus helps them to see themselves as belonging to the whole world, to all the nations. And maybe you've experienced this too, a vocation that maybe came to you first when you were young, that later took a bit of a turn and led you to new things, different things than you ever could have expected when it came initially. Before the disciples can embrace a new global vision, they have to have a healthy sense of where they came from, what their roots are. So the first reading from the book of Deuteronomy recounts some of the great events in what's called salvation history. That is, some of the beautiful things that God has done in the past. And each one of us here has a personal salvation history of beautiful things that God has done for us, miraculous things. And we can't forget those. We can't forget the work God has done in our earlier life. But we have to find a healthy way to bring the past along so that we're not abandoning it on the one hand, but also so we're not trying to live as if today was yesterday. One of my friends is both a pastor and a woodworker. He specializes in building musical instruments, specifically guitars. He often builds them from the wood of pews that he gets from churches that have either closed or the congregation has moved or it's adapted somehow. And usually he's commissioned by the parishioners to do this after they realize that having this one specific incarnation, this one specific building or place no longer serves them, it's healing and helpful for them to have a way to bring their former home along and to have it inform their current message, their mission, their song, but without holding their ministry back by tying them to a bygone era. So some of you guys are preparing to go off to college. Some of you might be starting a new job or preparing to move to a new home or to retire. So this picture of Jesus' followers having both roots and wings is instructive for us. The challenge is always to be open to that bigger view that's waiting and also to have a sense of our history without letting it encumber us. So to find creative ways to bring the past along, not try to recreate it, but to see how it might inform and bless this different moment now. Recently, I read that most of us, looking at photographs, are unable to tell whether we're looking at a supernova through a telescope or a molecule of the coronavirus under a microscope. We don't know what we're seeing. We don't know whether we're seeing the far reaches of the cosmos or something infinitesimally small. And I suppose you could take from this some skepticism or cynicism about human beings' ability to know whether we're really seeing the big picture or not. Maybe you know what it's like to be so zeroed in on a happening in your own life that that bigger picture that Jesus is always inviting us to seems like an impossibly high bar to reach. Maybe you have financial worries. Maybe you're waiting for test results. Maybe worry about a child or a parent seems to consume about every waking minute. Or maybe a disease truly does feel as big as the sky. We've all had times of tunnel vision, sometimes with very good reason. But another way to see the conundrum of us not knowing what's a supernova and what's a virus molecule is to say, the signature of God is written in everything. There is what scientists call symmetry between phenomena at every level of reality. So it's not incidental that a cell looks like a star. And there's a reason that a snowflake, when seen under a microscope, begins to look like a galaxy. and why the veins of a leaf, when you squint and look close, really seem to follow the same branching pattern as a river delta, and why the grains and sediments in many rocks, when you see them up close, look for all the world like a sunset over a horizon. The vast sweep of the universe and the smallest hyper-focused view, the nitty-gritty details of our life, God is present in them all. They're all connected. Everything matters. Today, the church marks Trinity Sunday. Theologians have tried and failed to find a way of talking about the Trinity meaningfully for centuries. Some have likened it to water. God the Creator is like an overflowing fountain. Jesus the Son is like a river flowing from it. And the Spirit is like the river delta fanning out over the land. Others have said, the Creator is like the sun. Jesus is like the ray of sunlight. And the Spirit is like the warmth of the rays spreading across the whole earth. This is my favorite. Meister Eckhart said, this is what goes on in the Trinity. God laughs, and the Son laughs back at God. And when the Creator laughs and the Son laughs, then laughter gives joy, and joy gives love, and that love is the Holy Spirit, which is beautiful. But I don't know about you guys, none of this helps me at all grasp the mystery of the Trinity. But it does help me experience the true holiness of laughter and water and sunshine. It reminds me that these things truly reveal God. Perhaps the most famous icon painter was a man named Andrei Rublev. He was a Russian artist who lived in the 15th century, and he tried, what an undertaking, to paint the Trinity. His work shows figurative renderings of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and at the front, there's a worn place where most scholars believe he attached a mirror. We're meant to see ourselves as part of the divine dance. What matters isn't to wrestle the mystery to the ground, but to be caught up in it, caught up in the flow of the love of God, which is with us always, Jesus says in our gospel, present in every moment, in every little thing that we look at more closely, that we put under a microscope, you could say, until we start to see all the connections, until we can see whole universes within it. God is present in every joy and sadness, in every average day and every impossible situation. God's love is with us always, to the end of the world and back. A spiritual master once said, God is vast beyond our imagination, beyond the power of words to describe. So puzzled, one of her students asked, well, then why do you speak about God at all? Why does the bird sing? Said the master. Not because he has a statement, because he has a song. Talk about God is not to be understood. It's to be listened to as you listen to the wind in the trees and the sound of the river and the song of the bird. It awakens in the heart something beyond all knowledge. May our hearts awaken to the love of God, holding this one blue-green planet, every leaf and river and ray of sunlight, every tear and every laugh.